Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Vonna Pfeiffer.
You're listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for the needle artist. Mm. Yeah. I screwed up Sunday. I copy and paste with the Gayan Rogers thing, and I failed to update the links. So if you tried to listen Sunday, you either got nothing or you got an old, depending on what you did, you got an old one. So it's all corrected now. This is Monday. It's all corrected. So if you thought you didn't hear the newest one, with the one with Vonna, it's the only one with Vonna of the three that she did, check again because, yeah. I copy and paste, got distracted, posted it, didn't check it. Yeah. And then it wasn't working. Somebody wrote that it wasn't posting to the podcast apps.
Oh.
For crying out loud, because we had just put in a few weeks ago a caching system because we were using up so much bandwidth that it was getting expensive. And so my provider said, well, we can put this in. It'll cut way down on the bandwidth usage, which it has. And so that saves money. But there have been problems, intermittent problems with it. So I just immediately assumed that it was that. So I wrote, I wrote to him sternly, like, you know, this has got to get fixed. I've had enough of this kind of thing. And he wrote back and he says, what's the file name? And I went and looked it up and it's like, oh, you idiot. Oh. So then I had to write the, oh, I'm so sorry. His name's Chris. I'm so sorry. I've been with him for, you know, 20 plus years. So I'm really sorry, Chris. Shouldn't even have bothered you. I'm an idiot. You know, all those things. It's like, oh, you know, but good. Yeah. He's good tech support because, cause that's the first thing when you do tech support is you ask things like, did you plug it in? Did you turn it on? Cause 60% of the time, that's what it is. So what's the file name? And I looked, oh, geez, really? No, I did the stupid thing, you know? So if you had trouble, it's fixed, has been fixed. And if it wasn't going to your podcast app, it is now. It was Monday. When you listen to this, it was Monday right away. And by the way, I realized that we were not on the Google podcast system. So we will be here in the next couple of days. Fiber Talk will be on there. So if you use that or prefer to use that, it will be there. I thought we were, but we weren't.
Hmm.
There's so many of them, so many podcast apps, and a lot of them just pick them up. Like we're on several where they just picked it up. I didn't even know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a problem because then to prove that prove it's my podcast and to get an account with them is sometimes a lot of work. To prove it. So yeah, it happens a lot. Where you just, oh, I guess they picked us up. Well, you know, which is good. I don't care. But, I thought we were on Google. We're not, we will be. Cause that's a big one.
Yep.
Yep. Oh, sponsored by, as always, we are sponsored by Sassy Jack Stitchery. And here is a word from Kim.
This edition of Fiber Talk is proudly sponsored by Sassy Jack's Stitchery. Sassy Jack's is a vibrant young needle workshop located on the picturesque Main Street of Weaverville, North Carolina, happily situated between Five Little Monkeys Quilt Shop and nationally recognized Well-Bred Bakery. We are nestled in a valley of the beautiful Blue Ridge Mountains of western North Carolina, just minutes north of Asheville and a short 20-minute drive from the Biltmore Estate, one of America's national treasures. Sassy Jack Stitchery is proud to be a brick-and-mortar needle workshop, featuring cross-stitch, counted needlepoint, embroidery, and punch needle. We host a wonderful collection of fine antique needlework samplers on display, many of which have chartered patterns available for purchase. We frequently rotate our collection, so every visit is likely to yield a new treasure for you to enjoy. We are moving into our fall and winter season of stitching at Sassy Jack's, and we invite you to join us in one of the many opportunities we've created for you to stitch along and learn. We have a return of our tree decorating event, wherein everyone who sends us a newly stitched ornament for our tree by December 24th will receive a coupon for 15% off any single purchase during January and February. This year will also mark our third year doing our special Valentine's Day small exchange. We've opened our designer selection to include Summerhouse Stitchworks and Jeanette Douglas Designs, in addition to Plum Street Samplers. You may stitch any small design from any of these designers using a pattern and supplies from your stash or purchasing something new from us at Sassy Jack's. Finish it into a needlework small and send it to us before January 25th. We will exchange it from another in the group and send you a beautiful gift from your stitching sister just in time for Valentine's Day. Check out our website or upcoming newsletters for more details and finishing tips for these fun winter traditions at Sassy Jack's. We hope you find a way to visit us soon. If you can't make it to us, we hope you visit us online at Facebook, Instagram, SassyJackStitchery.com, and our new FlossTube channel, Yonder Ways. We love it when you stop by and say hi, whether it's in person or online. We truly appreciate you, and we really appreciate all we hear and learn from Fiber Talk. We are super proud to be a sponsor of this wonderful resource for stitching goodness. Thank you, Fiber Talk, for giving us some stabby pokey talk twice a week. Kim and team at Sassy Jack Stitchery.
Thanks, Kim. Thanks for sponsoring us.
Yeah.
Well, we got a long way in. 3 minutes before we mentioned the sponsoring. That'll get them, see? Yeah. Throw people off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's say it was intentional.
Okay.
Yeah. Not that I... we got going and forgot. but cool thing, speaking of the Sassy Jack Stitchery, in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, first weekend in October, yeah, we're going to be there.
Yes, we are.
We are going to be there. First time that you and I have been in the same room ever.
That's right.
Yeah. Yep.
I know. It's going to warm the cockles of our hearts.
Yeah, that. Yeah. First time I'm going to have to go get some heart cockles. So, yeah, we're going to be there for the Claudia Dutcher Kistler Dutch Treat Designs lecture on Bristol Orphanage samplers. That's going to be fun.
I cannot wait.
Yes. Sold out. What, 70-some people going to be there?
Yeah.
It's going to be a building full of people. For the lecture, and then there's a project that goes with it, or two projects that goes with it, because it starts on Friday and ends Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Looking forward to that.
Exciting.
Yeah. It's all day Saturday, and then Saturday night, there'll be a little show and tell and stitching, and Vaughn and I are going to try and do at least two shows, I think. Probably one of them live. Yeah.
I thought that there was a couple of, look at your letter. I thought that Friday night they had like a stitch thing too.
Well, then let's go.
I think it was like a little reception on Friday night or something.
Yeah, there's a reception, then dinner.
And on then, our own.
Yep.
And then go back for stitching.
Yeah.
Sassy Jacks until 9.
Right.
And then the next day, 9. And then there's something in the evening, too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. It's going to be fun.
I cannot wait. I really am excited.
So, and for those people who can't be there, we will share as much as we can, so it'll be semi-like you're there.
Oh, yeah. And we'll talk about it for, you know, weeks afterwards.
that'll probably happen, too. Yeah. there's a very good chance of that. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, really looking forward to that because Claudia is one of the experts.
Premier, I think. Premier experts, from according to what I have, since my early love of Bristol samplers, her name comes up a lot when I'm researching.
I probably should not have said one of. I should have said the.
Oh,
expert,
well, I
don't
said
you think?
It. Yeah, I think she is. Yes.
Yeah. So I'm going to do a little reading. You've been doing a bunch of reading on that. I'm going to have to, I've just been cursory paying attention. So now I'm going to have to do a little learning.
Well, have you watched the, if you Google George Mueller, who is the man that founded the Bristol orphanages.
Yeah.
If you put that in YouTube, there is an excellent documentary on there. And I think it's the first one that comes up.
Okay.
And you should watch it.
Because most of what I know about it is what I've learned from guests.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, I'll watch that then. Then I'll be semi-fully educated.
Yeah, it doesn't have, I mean, it doesn't really talk about the needlework part really at all. Maybe it might touch on it. But it just talks about George Mueller, the man. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because he was like he was tremendous in terms of taking care of all these kids and
yeah
yeah
very a very God-filled man. Yeah, I mean, it's very inspiring to watch, to listen to it. So.
Well, and he died. He didn't have anything left when he died. Isn't that right?
I think it was always kind of pretty lean the whole time through, yeah. But you know, they would get, I mean, he built, 8 orphanage houses before it was all over. And, you know, he just put him and his wife, and just put everything into the orphanages and the upkeep of them. And, you know, I don't know numbers, but I think thousands of children,
oh, I'm sure, yeah.
stayed in those homes, were raised in those homes. So, yes, a very inspiring documentary to look up on YouTube.
All right, I'll look it up. So, yeah, so we're going to get to learn about all the samplers that came out of there and so on and so forth. That's going to be great.
Mm-hmm.
And Stitch.
I know. Oh, yeah.
Yep, the whole shooting match. We're going to do it.
Yep.
Yep, a couple shows. Well, you got Keith and Ellie going, Marga's going.
Yeah.
It's a whole thing.
It's just the whole, it's like the Brady Bunch family vacation. We're going down early on Thursday. We're going to try to go. Ellie wants to go with me to, oh gosh, what's that house down there? That big fancy house?
Oh, the, yeah, that big one.
The Vanderbilt home. Oh my God, what's the name of it?
Yeah, I can't think of it either, but yeah, that one, yeah.
We're going to it.
All right.
On Thursday, we're going to leave here, I think, at 4:00 in the morning.
Oh, and try, man, to
get there. I know. And try to get there at noon and tour the home. I thought that she and Keith were going to just do it on their own, but when she started researching it and looking at it, and she goes, Mom, you can't miss that. And so I
there
said,
you were.
Okay.
Well, she'll be in her element because there's like a slew of artists in Weaverville and Asheville.
That's what I told her too.
Yeah.
And I think that I don't know what they're going to do on Friday. You know, Keith and her, well, Keith particularly is the hiker. So I know that there will be some hiking in their future. But, you know, he just said to me, figure out where I'm dumping you because
we're out of here.
I was like, okay.
Your baggage, Vanna. We got to unload you. Ellie and I figure got out, things to do.
Right. Figure out where you're going. I was like, all right. So anyways.
Hey, that's all right. Oh, good for them. Yeah, she'll be. Yeah, there's lots of artistic things down there. She'll go crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'll be fun. So there we have it. And we'll, you know, for those, of course, you know, that's the old thing with magazines. People always used to, you know, do you do show coverage? And I always used to say, no, I don't do show coverage in a magazine. Because two things, most of the people can't go to the show and I'm just rubbing it in. And so we're going to try and help you since, you know, if you can't go for, or tried and couldn't go or whatever, we will try to bring as much of it to you as we can.
Yeah.
So you'll get a sense.
Well, I think it's always exciting. It's kind of like a Nashville show. I always just wait to look, you know, to see who's, you know, what's going on and all that stuff. So,
yeah. Yeah. So yeah, we'll do as much as we can to share with you what we experience. And, you know, to that end, this past weekend, Vanna and I did two live events, two live things on Instagram, both just to work out the kinks so that we would at least have a clue how to do it. One I messed up and it went on my personal Instagram page. And the second one, the one we did Sunday, went on the Fiber Talk page where it belongs. And you should be able to see that in the story section, but I don't know how long they'll stay there. I think
it's only 24 hours.
Is it? Oh, never mind. But that's where they'll be. So if we do live stuff, that's where they'll be. So you'll want to go to follow the Fiber Talk Instagram.
Yeah.
Thing for live ones, and then follow Fiber Talk on YouTube, because that's where I'll post the other videos that we do. And then if we do just audio podcast, then that'll be through the usual thing, and I'll get the links right. you know, for entertainment purposes only. But I hate that. I woke up this morning getting ready to go for my bike ride. First one, you know, first email. This isn't posting. Oh, you got to be kidding me. And immediately, you know, I'm trying to get out the door. Immediately, I thought it's the provider's problem. And no, it was user error once again. So we'll get that right. Mm-hmm. So that's exciting. We're looking forward to it. And, of course, go to Sassy Jack's and do some shopping. I'm looking to get the linen for our Agnes Day stitch along that we're going to do Lent next year.
Yeah.
I'm looking to get the linen for that because I want to do a dark blue or mm-hmm. or purple maybe.
Mm-hmm.
For royalty.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I want to see it firsthand, you know. I don't want to buy it over on the line. Yeah.
You know what I thought I was going to do with mine?
Hmm.
I think I might do it on as a white work.
Oh.
Yeah.
Whoa. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now you're talking.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do it as a white work.
Oh, wow. Okay. That creates some visions. That'd be beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that I think I would just do cross stitches for most of it. You know what I mean? But I think white on white, that would be, or ecru on ecru, you know, I think that would be pretty.
But there's got to be some places in there where you can slip in a little satin stitch or some other things to.
Yeah.
To,
No cut work. I'm not going to do cut work.
Yeah. But like, there's got to be, you should be able to put some Montenegrin in. Or not.
Montenegrin's okay if as long as there's no freaking double back stitch. Diagonal double back stitch, I'll be all right.
Yeah, that turned out. I was working on that last night, sent you a couple pictures there. Mm-hmm. Once you get the Montenegrin a little bit, it really is not a big deal.
No.
Not at all. I mean, it has it's getting to understand the rhythm and the how it goes is one thing. But then once you get it, it just kind of trots right along.
Yeah. Have you done the double back stitch yet?
No, that's tonight.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, this is Monday. I mean, this is tonight. Yep. You'll be getting a call. Help.
You'll probably, the call will be, what are you complaining about? This is a cakewalk. I don't know. It's horrible. The double back stitch, just straight double back stitch, is not a big deal. It's the horizontal double back stitch that stinks.
You mean the angle?
Did I say a diagonal?
Yeah.
The diagonal one is just like horrible. I just do not understand. I just cannot wrap my head around it at all. Not at all.
Okay. Well, have to see. That's tonight.
Okay. Well,
that's tonight. Yeah.
May the force be with you on that one.
I hope something's with me because you have me a little nervous, I have to say. And then when the other day when you sent the picture where you had ripped it all out, it's like, oh, no. That was depressing.
I know. Oh, well, it does. I will say my redo, I'm almost happier with my redo. So it always comes out. I mean, I am. It does look awful pretty. And somebody posted on my, when I said I'm about ready to cry or whatever on Instagram, someone posted that she's doing, I guess she must be stitching the queen sampler too. And she says that she's stitching just straight from the back, just doing the parallel lines. Which I do that only at the corners. That's the only time I do it. But I do it. I do flip it and just do, because I cannot understand how to turn the corners. So just stitching from the back, doing parallel lines to get through the corners is like awesome.
Okay.
But it gets a little boring just doing parallel lines when you're just doing it. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah. But see, that's what worked for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
that's what she said she's doing. She
I may just do that. Yeah,
she's just doing parallel lines. But see, it's like you'll see what I mean when you're doing the horizontal part because it's like it just gets confusing. It just gets confusing on which hole do you put your needle in?
Yeah.
So
well, we'll see, and maybe if I'm doing horizontal, because see, that's what I found with the reversible cross stitch. Is it just, you know, I just make sure I make boxes. I just made boxes on the back and then let the X's take care of themselves.
All right.
So maybe if I do this, just do the lines, then the rest will take care of itself. We'll see. Doodle cloth.
The doodle cloth, I can always do everything perfect on the doodle cloth. Then when I get to the freaking linen, then it's like I lose translation. Oh, well. I don't know.
There's a knowledge gap between doodle cloth and real deal.
I think, oh, I can mess up here, and I do it, and it's like, oh, cake, I got this. And then I go to my real piece, and it's like, I don't know, I just can't even, I don't know. I'm just having a real hard time with this band.
Well, I'll see. You may get a call. Help. But then you're no help because you're fighting it anyways.
So. Yeah, I'm no help.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will say it is beautiful, though. I mean, I'm just sitting here looking at it, and just the overall piece is just really stunning.
Yeah, it really is. Really is impressive. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Oh, that's right. Yesterday when we did the live thing, we were talking about the fact that you cleaned out your ottoman.
Yeah. I did. I did clean it out. It's kind of...
Because let me have the picture here. You have your stitching corner and your working projects in your bedroom. Mm-hmm. Then you have the finishing business down in the basement.
Right.
So that's what, two floors down.
Yeah.
And then you have the warehouse with your workers out in the back 40.
Yeah.
Man.
I know. It's like...
You need a consolidate or something. I don't know.
That's what I'm hoping for. Keith is saying that, you know, when we get a new house, you know, that God love him. He said when we get a new house, which we not anytime soon, but I'm hoping in the next couple of years, it'll be the house, you know, our retirement home or whatever. And he says when I go, well, what is the number one thing that we're looking for whenever we get a new house? And he says, well, all on one level, which are at least the master bedroom on the first floor, which amen on that, because right now I run three flights and it's like, holy smack. You just get tired running up and down. See my laundry room's in the basement. But anyways, then he goes, it's just to get everything on one floor and our master bedroom, you know, on the first floor where we're primarily at. And he goes, but I will say this, another very thing high on the list is to get you a nice craft room that's like heated, you know, heated, and you know, because now I'm not heated or cooled, or it's just, you know, me with brick walls, and
it's basement air.
yeah exactly. And even though it's not like a dungeon, because here we're on limestone beds, and so there is no full four-sided basements in the ground. They're all three-sided.
Oh, okay.
So the whole backside of our house is, you know, open. I can see grass and sunlight, and there's a door and all that stuff. But it's still not, you know, we could refinish it, but, and this is going to make me sound like not what how I want to sound, but our home is already the largest home in this subdivision, and not because it's some grand estate, because it's not, but it sat with nobody buying it for a year, and they kept on marking it down, and it was like 4,200 square feet.
Holy smokes!
Yeah, and we got it for, you know, and we needed it at that time because we were coming from 1,800 square feet with four kids, and we were like living on top of each other. Yeah. So we got this house for a really good price, but the reason it wasn't selling, and the realtor told us this, was because it was so big. I mean, bigger, more expensive than the other homes around us.
Yeah. didn't fit in the deal. Yeah.
Right. So that's how come my husband, because there's been many people go, well, why doesn't your husband refinish the bay or, you know, finish the basement? The reason is because then that would like really shoot this house out of the, you know what I mean? We would never recoup that money.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, but to get a house, because, yeah, then you'll be approaching empty nest time. So then you could look at something where you'd have glass and light and everything. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want a really nice kitchen. I mean, I have a pretty nice kitchen now, but I do a lot of cooking. I think everybody knows that I cook all the time. And I want to have one of those two ovens. I want two ovens.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Like in the wall, two ovens.
Yeah.
I want two ovens. I want like granite countertops all around. There's just a lot of things that I want. And I hope that I know it's got to be out there somewhere. And so, you know,
want them and I'm going to throw a fit till I get them.
Well, the one thing that I've always said at every home we get, like the house that we came from, our starter house, you know, it was a nice little house when we first got married. I mean, it was a beautiful little cutesy home. And, but the kitchen, you know, for two people, it was awesome. You start throwing in babies and twins and then, you know, all of that. It was like, what in the world?
Twins yeah. being different from babies. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we had like, at one point we had three high chairs in our kitchen. Think about that.
Oh, jeez.
It was a nightmare. So, I mean, you know, so when we came to this house, it was like nirvana because the kitchen was like huge compared to what we came from.
Yeah, yeah.
And now I don't care. It doesn't have to be bigger. I just want it more.
Better laid out.
Deluxe, I guess. More deluxe than what this one is. So we've got a very nice home. It's just that it's not like, it's not perfect.
Okay, you better stop. You're going to get into elitist category here in a hurry. Be careful.
I want to have like, you know, this next house is the last house that I live in. You know, that's what I told him. I said, if we move, they're going to have to carry my dead body out because I hate moving. And and another thing I want is a stream running by our house.
A stream?
A little creek. Yeah, a little creek. I always say that, and Keith goes, baby, I can get you everything. I don't know about the stream. Because I always go, he'll go, what do you want in a new house? I go, I want this, this, and this. And I'll say it. And then I go, and I'd really like to have a creek running by our house. And he always like rolls his eyes and goes, I can get you the other stuff. I don't know about the creek. It's like, okay, well, maybe we can negotiate on that one.
Dig a ditch and get a pump. You can just run water back and forth all day long. Yeah.
Oh, shit. Yeah. I don't know.
But having a studio, because, boy, I'll tell you, I'm always jealous of the people who have, you know.
Oh, yeah. You know. I mean, I don't have a studio. I have a cave.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, I would love to have a very nice, I would really like to have that. I mean, a dedicated space where that's mine.
Yeah.
But also to warm the cockles of your heart. I mean, this will just make you, we'll need to pause after I tell you this. But the other day, Katie. You know, she's getting ready to graduate with her bachelor's degree next spring. And then she has one more year in her master's degree. And she goes, I just hope that you and Dad figure out where you're going to go, where you're going to move to. And I thought, well, I go, well, we're going to live here still. And she goes, no, I mean, like where your house is going to be, where your house that you're going to leave this house for, where it's going to be. And I go, why? And she goes, because I want to buy a house close to you.
Whoa.
I know. Isn't that sweet?
Whoa.
And she said that. I go, I was telling that to Keith. I go, that almost made me want to cry. And Ellie goes, well, I want to live in the yard barn. I go, in the yard barn? And she goes, yeah, out in the back. When I graduate, I'll just come and live in your yard barn. And I said, oh, okay. Whatever, Ellie.
Yeah, they'll all change their tune.
Yeah. My boys were going to have an RV and park it in the driveway. That's what one of them said.
That's classy.
That was classy. Now he doesn't even want to be in the same room with me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Let alone in an RV in my driveway. So.
Yeah, we got one kid in St. Louis and one in Phoenix. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey.
I know.
As long as they're happy.
That's right.
Yep. So I found it interesting when you cleaned out your ottoman, which must have taken forever.
Actually, it didn't. I just got a trash, or I mean, not a trash bag. I just got a trash bag and started throwing them in there. A laundry basket. I got a laundry basket, and because I folded laundry that afternoon. And then I just thought, you know, I have to get this crap out of here. It was making me nervous. So I just opened up my ottoman, which was stuffed to the brim. I mean, like level with the lid.
Oh, geez.
And I know it was. And I just took everything out of there, put it in the laundry basket, and hauled it downstairs. And then I disassembled all the kits, there was only one thing that stitched. And my longtime followers will know that it's the Barbara Anna's Creatures Great and Small. I started that. We told that yesterday during the live thing, but I started that 3 years ago, the summer that I was struggling with my job at the hospital. And every time I tried to pick up that piece and work on it, I just like felt bad voodoo. So I threw that away. I just threw it away.
Just pitched it.
I just threw the whole thing. Even all the linen. I didn't even cut off any of the linen.
Whoa.
And I just was, yeah, I was just done with the whole, it was just bad juju. I just threw that whole thing away. And then that was really the only thing that I had stitched on. And the rest of the stuff, I just disassembled, put all my threads back into my master sets, whether they were, you know, over-dyed or DMC, and refolded the linen and put it in there, you know, because each, my fabric is, I have 30, you know, a drawer for 36, a drawer for 40, a drawer, you know.
Yeah.
So I put those in the appropriate drawers. And refiled the patterns, put my project bags in an empty project bag box, and there you go. Done.
Ottoman cleaned out.
Ottoman cleaned out.
Just now just the active ones.
Now it's just like it's the things that I think, oh, I might want to stitch this. You know, so I can open it up and look at it. So I have like that needlework press one, Sarah Hardeman. Mm-hmm. That one, I have the one that Jean Lee sent me. What was the name of that? How can I not remember that? It was my unicorn pattern. Threads Through Time. What is the name of that one? You know, it looks like Sarah Hardeman.
I don't remember.
I know I can't remember. Anyways, that one, I've got several, like four or five of them in there that I think, gosh. Oh, I got Harriet Salt in there. You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Because, see, I thought it was interesting because that's a decision to make when you do that kind of clean out is if you have these things kitted up, do you keep them, the threads, like all the threads and the linen together because you kitted it up? Or do like you did, where you just put everything back into the master filing system.
Mm-hmm.
Then do you mark the chart and say that you kitted it, or you always get a kit whenever you buy, so it's kind of a moot point then.
Well, I have such a huge stash that I don't a lot of times. Okay, so recently with the samplers, I've been buying kits because I don't have silks. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And since I've become this snooty snapper, this snooty sampler stitcher, that's hard to say. Say that.
What?
I know. Since I've been doing all these, you know, falling in love with these samplers, I've been buying kits. But I have come to think after I've stitched on Sarah again, after all this, you know, boy, DMC, I really like DMC. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I'm going to think harder next time when I get a sampler, am I going to get the silks, or am I just going to get the chart and the fabric and think about the silks once it gets here? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, but I have like a whole, like an incomplete set of classic color works because that's my favorite thread.
Mm-hmm.
And I have like a large portion of the gentle arts, and I don't have as many weeks because I like weeks, but I think that the coverage on it is a little poor. So I don't have as much as that, but I have all of those filed. I have a lot of thread. I have all my DNC filed. And for me, when I want to kit something, I usually have it all downstairs because, you know, it's like what I think we'd talked about this before. I buy fabric in large pieces and then I just pull from my fabric bins.
Yeah.
And in the same way with my threads. So no, I don't put like if it was kitted. Now I will leave things kitted if I know that I really would have a possibility of stitching it again. But what I tore down, I not anytime soon would I stitch that.
Yeah.
What I tore down. So,
because see, it's an interesting dilemma. Because yeah, you have a large stash, years and years of all the things you do, and I don't have that. I mean, I have. Yeah, okay, I have plenty, but so see, I've had to make that decision, and I started out keeping, if I bought all the threads, I would keep them in a bag all together, and then that got unwieldy in terms of storage, and so then I just said, all right, I'm putting a post-it note on the chart that says it's kitted, and then I just take all the threads and put them in whatever grouping and drawer they belong. And then I know that when I go to stitch that particular project, it has a tag on it that says I own, I have all the threads and it says I have the ground cloth, whatever that might be.
Right.
Canvas or whatever. And then I'll mark the canvas that this piece was for this and just put that with the other linen or canvases. But then see, I did that because there have been now two times where I have taken, one was linen and one was canvas that I had purchased for a kit. And then I wanted to use that for something else.
Oh yeah.
So I just noted that, the ground cloth for that particular project got cut up.
Yeah.
And then I'll have to get new. Because it just happened to be that's what I wanted to use for another project. And so then I thought, well, it's sitting here. I'm not using it, so I might as well cut it up. And then if I go to do that other project, then I'll just buy some. But right. I think it's just an interesting different ways that you can approach that. If you, you know, when you have a stash, how do you approach storing your threads and your ground cloth and your charts? And
right.
Because and that's something I need to look at is my charts, because they're just in piles. There's no rhyme or reason.
Do you know how I do mine?
No, I do not. But why don't you tell me?
Okay, I bought one of those. It's for scrapbook papers. You get them at Michael's. They're like tall, skinny bins, and they have drawer. You know, and they're on casters, so they can roll around too. And so I have three of those. And so on each drawer, I have like, so the big drawers, I put the designers that I have like a large quantity of patterns of, like Blackbird designs. I have a huge collection of Blackbird's designs, almost like, I think almost everything they've ever put out, I have, even the quilt books. And, so I have like two large bins for Blackbird designs. I have, of course, a large bin since I'm the model stitcher, and I have been the model stitcher and finisher for Little House a large portion of my career. I have a very large collection, as you can imagine, of Little House designs and Country Cottage designs. So I have several drawers of them. Then when I don't have a lot, like Prairie Schooler, I have almost, I think, I have every Prairie Schooler original chart that was ever put out, because I started collecting those when I was in, when they started designing, I was like in late high school, and I was cross stitching actively then, and I would get them at Ben Franklin, and I have almost every, and
wow.
That's, I would like, yeah, I think I have every chart Prairie Schooler ever put out.
Wow.
And,
right
so
from
I have
day
all,
one, right from,
yes.
Day, wow.
Mm-hmm. And, I have all of them. So they have a big, you know, big a big drawer, but then on other drawers. So like, if I have like Lizzie Kate and Lottie Da, I'll maybe put those two together, or Heartstring Samplery and Threadwork Primitives. They have a drawer together. Carriage House Samplings has its own drawer. The Good Housewife has its own drawer. See, look, I can remember them all. Plum Street Samplers have their own drawer. Brenda Gervais has her own drawer. And then, so that's how it works. And then if I run out of the drawers, then I have a small filing cube that I have. And these are people that I might have only like one or two or three or four charts of theirs. And I have a hang folder, file folder with
okay.
the whoever it is.
Yeah.
So that's how I do mine.
Okay.
And I can find stuff fast. Like if somebody asked me, do you have this? I can go right down to my drawer and find it.
Yeah. See, that's, and now I don't have, I mean, I have a minuscule compared to that. But
yeah.
Every time I want to find something, then I have to haul out all the stacks and rifle through them all. And so that's where
yeah.
I got to get organized. It's like that yesterday when we were doing the live thing, and that Music Makes My Heart Sing or whatever piece that is. I found that looking for something else and have no idea why it was there.
Yeah. See, now I have.
I hate that.
I know. And I have done things where you go through your, you know, because I am a proponent of going through your stash at least once a year. Every pattern in my arsenal, I touch at least once every year. And I will like pull things like, oh, I forgot about, you know, because you forget about what you have. And so you go through it. And it's like, oh, I never did stitch this. I also, and this, I'm probably going to have to stop doing this, but I usually do not get rid of my patterns. I usually, if I stitch them, I keep them. And I'm probably going to have to stop that because I've got so much. Anyways, I have gone through, I mean, I'll go through it at least once a year, and then I'll pull things. And then a lot of times I have a Longaberger basket that I put the, like a small one where I can just put them standing up in the basket, and I'll put them in there, and I have a little tag on there that says things I want to stitch. And, well, you know, then something prettier and brighter and shinier comes along.
Yep. Yep.
Or Gary Parr tells you that, you know, why would you want to not, you know, expand your horizons and all that. And then your whole life changes. And then it's like, what, you know, and then you'll think about something and you'll think, where is that? I know I had that. I know I have that pattern. And you look and you look and you look and you never can find it. And then you buy it again. And 9 times out of 10, once it arrives in your mailbox, guess what? You find it.
Yep.
So, anyways, I try not to do, I do pull it out. I do pull out things I want to stitch, but I'm going to have to like kind of be very selective on that because I've been bad about that recently, about in the last year or two, where I've pulled things and it's like, where did I put that? I cannot remember where it is. And I think I just need to start making a list rather than pulling the pattern. But yeah, I got lots of stuff. I mean, I've got too much stuff. I know I do. But a lot of it is like if people invite me to come to their needlework shop, you know, for a stitching or something, I feel like I have to buy something. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I have several of those. Yeah. Where, yeah, you feel like, all right, I need to at least put some money in the till so you buy something.
Right.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Right.
And I, you know, nothing wrong with that. I mean, I think that's what you do. You know, it's what you do.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah. And I will say that's a large reason why I have as much fabric as I have, because a lot of times I think you do not need any more patterns. What? And you have no business buying any more patterns. And so then I'll think, oh, well, I can always use fabric. And so I'll buy fabric. And since I've had like this, I've always had, you know, I've stitched on 40 count my whole career, or I mean, you know, adult career, and of stitching. But I will be honest with you, I wasn't in love with it as much, you know, 10 years ago as I am now. And I am predominantly stitching only on 40 count anymore, and at least 40 count. And it's kind of, so I don't have as big a stash on 40 count. And so that's one thing that, you know, I'm trying to build that up because, you know, why not?
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, why not? You don't need a reason. You just, why not? Yeah.
Yeah, why not? Just go ahead and buy it. But yeah, and then the whole fine line about keeping it, like what you were saying, I had these threads and I have this canvas or linen for this certain project. See, I struggle with that because I have whole sets where I have, okay, so like, for example, Sarah Brazier, you have that piece of fabric and, you know, that's a custom piece, cut piece, because she is so freaking big, right?
Right, right, yeah.
And so on things like that, so that Mary Lee, I have Mary Lee and I have it kitted with the silks and the fabric. Well, I'm not going to ever take that kit apart because that is cut specifically for Mary Lee. So whenever I decide to stitch that, I don't want to have to go find some custom piece cut fabric when I, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
So I try to keep those together. Now, if it's like things that are silly, you know, like just, well, I chose the fabric and the color and all that and threw it together, I break those down because, you know, I can always find another piece of fabric. But if it's custom cut, I always just save that with the pattern.
Right. Yeah. Well, see, that's the thing. Like I have several Debbie Rowley pieces and several of them kitted. Well, some require a specific color of background of canvas, and so I have that marked, and then a couple of them I have kitted with colors that have nothing to do with what she specified, what she stitched, like one of them I'm doing it all in grays so that one I'm just doing it on white canvas, but I'm doing all in grays. So on that one then I noted that I didn't keep them all kitted up. And actually I ended up using some grays from another thing, but then I made notes on that chart that this is kitted with all the grays and here's where they go and here's how they match up with her colors. So that, and then I have another one of hers. I think it's her Tropical Punch, which is such a collection that I kept those all together just because it's so many different threads and different colors and, outside of their element, they don't make any sense. So I just kept that all together in a bag. But I was just getting too many bags that it was just getting ridiculous. And then sometimes I would say, well, you know, I know I bought this DMC color. Where is that? Well, it was in one of those kits. And that got me thinking, well, why am I storing DMC in there? Because you can always get that.
Right.
So then I would take it out, but then note this kit's missing this color. It just got ridiculous. So I tried to find some system, but the system moved away from having them in bags and just putting it into the general stock and letting it go. So
did Debbie design Rainforest Crunch?
Don't know.
I think she did.
Rainforest Crunch? I don't know. That one doesn't ring a bell for me.
I'm going to look.
Okay.
Because I had that, and I kept on thinking it was her.
Don't know.
Or maybe I'm thinking a Tropical Punch. I don't know.
Well, that one's hers, yes. Yes. That's a beauty. One of these days I'm going to do that one. That's a beauty.
Mm-hmm. Needle Delights. That's who did Rainforest Crunch.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's just interesting how different people go about it.
Yeah, I think it. I could talk about that with somebody all day long.
Yeah.
You know, because you can always learn, like, you know, good examples or what's going on or something different, a different way to think about it. And right now, always this time of year, my cave is like very not tidy. And it's because, you know, I'm trying to get finishing done. I've made a mess with projects all year long. I try to put up when I get done with something, I try to put it up, but you know, I don't always do that.
Yeah.
And so, and then when, with this influx of, things that I cleaned out my ottoman. So there's a lot of crap laying around down there because of that. And yeah, Keith always comes down there, and whenever he's down in the cave, he'll sit there and he'll talk to me and he'll look around and he goes, "This is going to be a freaking nightmare when we move."
Yep. It is.
I go, "I know."
Yeah. Well, it's just, you know, everybody has their own way and at different amounts of stuff. And then you start out with, all right, this is the way I'm going to organize my things. And you know, you have four or five projects.
Yeah.
And then over time, that doesn't work anymore.
Right.
And so you have to adjust. And then if you want to do it properly, then you got to go back through everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll be in a store, yeah, and you'll pick up a chart, or you'll see some thread that just is some nice colors and nice thread, and I'm going to buy a couple skeins of that just to have. And all right, now what?
You know, I don't do that.
No?
No.
Oh, I'll do that. Yeah.
No, I don't do that at all. Although I will say, when we're down at Sassy Jack's, I want to look at reds, and I think I'll be getting some.
I don't do that, but I'm going to.
Because I already said that to Keith. I said, "I'm going to be buying stuff when we're at Sassy Jack's." And he goes, "What do you need?" And I go, "Well, he doesn't, you know, I don't know, something. I need something. Souvenir."
Souvenir. $500 worth of thread and linen souvenir. Yeah.
Oh, well. Yeah. So.
I'm surprised he didn't just say, "Yeah, I knew." And just move on.
No, he didn't. He just looked at me like, "What do you need?" And I go, "Well, you know," I go, "it's Sassy Jack's," like that. And he goes, "Well, who cares?" You know? And I go, "He just doesn't know. You know, he doesn't know." And
right.
I go, "Well, it's like the premier place." You know, I was telling him all this on east of the Mississippi, on for samplers and for, you know, and yada yada. And he goes, "Well, just as long as you keep it moderate." And I go, "Okay, all right."
Who's defining moderate, though?
Yeah, that's right. What is moderate?
Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever.
Yep. Hey, your first time, you got to go. You got to, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I've got to look at those Sassy Jack Ort jars. Surely she'll have some of those there, won't she?
I don't know what happened to that. See, you were going to buy one for us.
I had to work that day. I was sick. Wasn't I sick too?
I think it was. Yeah, I think that was things collapsed.
Yeah, I started like going downhill then. And so I don't know. Nothing was posted to her website because she said any leftovers would be posted to her website. And I never saw any posted on her website. And I keep on seeing pictures of people going, "Look what I got." Mm. You know?
Well, so, let's hope she has some, because I'd have one of those. Oh, and speaking of Ort jars. Speaking of Ort jars, Mike's Turn on Etsy.
Yeah.
Mike's Turn. I think it's with apostrophe S. Does either way. Mike's Turn. That's where I got my Ort jar.
Oh.
Some of the most beautiful woodwork on the planet. Hmm. Needle cases and Ort jars. And now he's got scissor holders and other things, but these extremely exotic woods that you've never heard of, or that you've heard of, but you would never think, you know, that you could do anything with them. Oh, yeah. So anybody wants Mike's Turn, and tell them you heard about it on Fiber Talk, please.
So, okay, now then, did you buy it from Etsy, or I thought he was at some place and you picked it up someplace?
No, I bought it from Etsy. No, it was another guy that was in Nashville. But it was not this guy.
Oh,
Mike's okay. Turn. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's the one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh, it's gorgeous. And I, you know, fine finished woods that have been lathed and sanded and polished are one of my favorite things on the planet. And this little art jar I have out of orange wood, I think it is just one of my favorite treasures because it's just, it's and I use it. You know, it's not like it sits there like the crown jewel or something. I literally use it for orts. But, oh, man, I love that piece. And Mike's turn. Yep.
Well, there's a lot of people going and looking
Etsy,
right now.
Because he isn't open all year long. I think he shuts down so he can make stuff, and then he makes it available before the holidays, wisely. But he doesn't. It's not like it's an endless supply. They're all handmade stuff. But just gorgeous stuff. Beautiful stuff.
Huh. Yep.
Heard it on Fiber Talk. Let him know. Yeah.
Have you talked to him?
No, just email communication when I bought my art jar. No. No, I don't know him. No.
Oh. Well, you know,
But if he gets an influx of business, I'd like him to know where it came from, if you know what I mean.
Oh, well, absolutely. Yeah. And the thing about Sassy Jack's art jar is we're going to be competing against 70 people.
I know.
So I'm going to have my elbows out and my helmet on.
Now, there's a mental image I didn't need.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah. Buy early and often. That's how that goes. Yeah. My elbows out and my helmet on. Great. That's just great. Yeah, that's a nice picture. That's just a real nice picture right there.
Mm-hmm. Elbowing my way in there.
Yep.
I'll tell you what, getting the art jars.
Yeah, I got to get one of those.
Well, that would be the perfect souvenir.
Yeah, it would. Yeah. Along with some linen and some thread. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. How come it's always an hour? When I look up, why is that always the case? Like yesterday, we're doing the live thing, 15 minutes. We're just going to do a quick 15-minute thing, 45 minutes later. How does that always happen? So anyway, I wanted to get this in, and this is going to take more than 5 minutes. So
okay.
Joni Raimondo
yeah. mm-hmm.
posted just before we started on YouTube with the Gay Ann Rogers thing.
Mm-hmm.
She posted a thing where she was not clear when we were talking about starting and finishing threads and then waist and away knots.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to talk about that for Joni's, just for Joni. Nobody else can listen. This is just for Joni. But in light of that, we're going to record this week the first two of what we're going to call Fiber Talk Starter. And that's going to be a series of beginning level everything videos. So we're going to record the first two. And the first batch of them are going to be sponsored by the Shepherd's Needle in Little Rock, Arkansas. So we're excited to have a new sponsor.
Yeah.
Shepherd's Needle at shepherdsneedle.com. So they're going to sponsor the first seven, I think it was. So we really appreciate that. But we're going to do this series, Vaughn and I. They're going to be video series, and we're kind of working out the details right now. So the first one is going to be about ground cloth. What is it? What does that mean? And what types are there? And how do you know what you're getting? It's just going to be very basic stuff for just this kind of thing where somebody is an absolute beginner or somebody's never encountered that aspect of stitching. And so we're going to do very basic things and break them down. So now everybody else quit listening. We'll be back in a minute. Quit listening because this is just for Joni. So we were talking and I realized when she asked the question about starting and finishing threads, when we were talking with Gay Ann, we were just flying right through it. And so somebody who doesn't know about waist and away knots would just go, what?
Yeah.
And so I wanted to just talk about that because, you know, waist and away knots, you'd think, well, what's the difference? And now this is my understanding, but now I'm going to get them screwed up. So like an away knot is when you make a knot in the end of a thread and you put it into the canvas or ground cloth some distance away, and then you stitch over. You put it like in the channel. So then you stitch over that, and then you just cut it off.
That's a waist knot.
Now, see, that's where I get it. Because, see, to me, a waist knot. Yeah, that's right. That's a waist knot. See, that's why we're doing this video. That's a waist knot. Because the away knot is when you do the same thing, but then you snip it, and then you come back and weave it under.
Right. Yes. Now, this is how I think.
See, I knew I'd get it screwed up.
That's all right. This is how I think about it, because I didn't know the difference between waist and away knot before I started the Queen Sampler. But how I can remember which is a waist knot and which is an away knot is waist knot. All you're wasting is the knot. So you put it you start it away from where you're going to stitch. If you're going to stitch from left to right, then you want to start your waist knot right in the channel, down, and then start your stitching, stitch over that tail, and then snip your knot. All you're getting rid of is your knot. So you're wasting your knot. The away knot is you park it away from your stitching. You begin stitching typically on the left hand. So if you're going to stitch left to right, you want to put your away knot on the left hand side. If you're stitching right to left, you put your away knot on the right hand side. And then you snip the knot and weave it back under. That's an away knot.
Yes.
And that's how I remember it.
That's a good thing. The waist knot, you're just wasting the knot. I like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then someone would say, well, why? Why one or the other? Well, for instance, a waist knot, then you're not disturbing the stitches by weaving it under.
Right.
Yeah. So like, particularly if you're doing basket weave, for instance, then you would, in weaving it under, you wouldn't change the tension of the stitches above on the surface by weaving it under. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this needs to be on our beginner series at some point. We need to have that as one of our beginner series. But I know that Gay-Ann Rogers thinks about these away and waist knots the same way that Darlene Osteen does, and how Darlene Osteen writes about them in A Proper Stitch is just exactly the same way that Gay-Ann Rogers was talking about in the show. And they are not for weaving at all. They don't want you to weave at all, because that changes the tension of your stitches.
Right.
It pulls. So if you do a waist knot every time, then, you don't ever have that problem, because it doesn't pull on your threads ever.
Right.
On your stitches.
Right. But that's not always, that doesn't always work though.
It doesn't. No, it doesn't at all.
Because sometimes the stitch you do is such that it won't bind down that length of thread.
Yeah.
You have to have a length to weave under after you've constructed the stitch.
Exactly. Yeah.
So yes, that's why you do it one or the other way, because it doesn't always work.
Right. Yeah. And yeah, that's exactly right. But Darlene Osteen is a big one for you do the away knot or you do a waist knot. Or she talks about this in the Proper Stitch. She shows where you do the waist knot, but you never weave the end. Once you finish, you bring it up, you bring the thread to the front and park it away from your stitching. And then at the end, hopefully that'll be covered by some other thread. There's a lot more detail to it than what I'm saying. But she'll say, don't weave it back under the same way you came, wait, do your next row of stitching, then take it back down under and weave it under the back, like going the same direction that your stitches were going. You see what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yeah. But that doesn't always work either. You can't always do that.
If it's white, if you're going from red to white, you don't want to weave red under white.
No.
So,
and that's where, that's where this whole beginning and ending threads I find absolutely fascinating, because you don't think about it, but until you actually do it, and there are so many ways to do it, and each of them has a purpose depending on what you're stitching.
Right. And now correct me if I'm wrong, though. Gay Ann was saying that weaving changes the tension of your changes the stitch, your thread,
right,
your thread legs. And so you shouldn't do that, right?
Right. She was talking about like the thread legs, and that and if you weave it under, number one, if it's going to change the tension, try not to do it. But then she was also looking at if you weave it under, the way that thread pulls on your ground cloth, that you need to match that to continue, to start with a new thread so that it looks so you can't tell where you started the new thread, because it's real easy. It's real easy, especially if you're sharing holes, to create a great big old hole.
Right.
And then, that's where you started a new thread. And so you have to be careful how you do that, how you start the new thread, so that everything is always pulling in the same direction uniformly.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, didn't you find it interesting that she said that if you make a cross stitch, you should make it the same way every time? So she is not a proponent of doing 1-2-1 all the way doing it and then coming back and crossing them. She was saying you finish your cross, and you do it the same way. If you come up at number one at the left hand bottom left and go up, go down, top right, that's the way you do it every time, right?
That's what she's saying, and I part with her on that, because I think if you have a length of thread and you're stitching an area that is not continuous, then I think you change the way you go up or down so that you can, so like if you stitch a horizontal row and then you're going to go up to do the next one, then I change at the end, I change how I make that last X so that I end up to start the next one. And see in that, but then that changes the way the thread goes down or comes up through the hole. And that would be her point would be, you should not do that.
Right. And so what does she do? Does she end off then?
I don't know. I don't know how she would address that.
I think that almost you would have to end off, or at least park it, start your next row. I mean, yeah, you would have to.
Yeah.
I think you almost would have to end off. I don't know. Yeah, let's talk about that snowflake that we did in reversible cross stitch. So that means after you got done with every leg, you had to stop.
Well, exactly. And I ain't doing that. I'm just not doing that.
I mean, I understand what she's saying, but if it comes down to judging and maybe that's what it was with my stitching at the fair, maybe, I don't know. But I mean, that's really technical. Right there. Well, you know what I'm saying?
But that's Gay Ann,
Yeah, I know. That's very highly technical. And I don't know how many stitchers, in theory, would do that.
But see, that's what I find. That's the part about stitching that really gets me excited, is talking about those very things. How do you do those little tiny things that, I guess ultimately you could make the case, change the quality of your stitching, but then are they worth it? Now you take these Santas that I'm doing, these little 6-inch Santas. Now they're, for instance, the face, there are two or three colors of, flesh, ecru, whatever, that make up the face. And there are a lot of quarter and half stitches and 3/4 stitches in this whole thing. And then back stitching to define. Now, When I stitch the face, I take one color and I stitch all of that color in the face before I end it off. Now, in doing that, I am not being uniform in the way I do every X. And then also I'm not being uniform if there's a partial stitch, because I'm trying to travel the thread so I don't have long carries. So I manage, I sit down and mentally map out, all right, I'm going to start here and I'm going to go here and I'm going to go down and I'm going to go into the middle, because there's a little row into the middle. And so I'm going to do half crosses in and half crosses out to finish them off. And then I'm going to continue down to the bottom of the face and work my way over to the right and I'm going to come back up, and there's these two little quarter stitches. I got to make sure I get those in. And so I map that all out, but I'm not changing threads on that because the space is all of, you know, 3/4 inch by 3/4 inch.
Right.
You know, there's no way I'm going to end and start threads to make it clean.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll come back with another color, and then I'll try and correct, like if I've taken a thread across an opening, you know, I'll try and come down in that opening and shove that aside, you know, shove that thread aside on the backside so that it, mm-hmm. it keeps a cleaner hole. I try to do things, but to keep every hole clean, no way. I'm not going to all that trouble. It's not worth it.
Well, it makes me also think about, have you ever like traveled your thread? Now, I try never to travel more than one stitch. Honestly, I don't. I'll just end off. Like I end off when I'm doing those Bristol samplers. It's like some, you know, I do a letter and end it off. Then I start my next letter. And,
I'm with you 100%. Two stitches maximum. I try to not travel any more than that. No.
Mm-mm. Right. But I'm going to be honest with you. In my lifetime, even here recently, but you know how they'll say, like, as long as you travel, but you keep it under your stitches, you know what I mean? I have traveled like that on the backside. But I'm not going to do that anymore after listening to Gay Ann.
Yeah, see, and I won't do that. I won't say that I've never done it, but I am really pretty strict with myself about not going any more than two stitches. I'll end it off and go start somewhere else.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what's, I used to be a big, you know, I used to do that a lot. But then once I learned the pin stitch to start and end, it's like,
right.
You know what I mean? It's like no big deal now.
Yeah, it changes the game.
Yeah, it changes the whole game about starting your thread.
Yeah.
Because it's a pain in the neck to hold that thread and then make sure that your stitches are getting over it. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Because like on an alphabet, on a sampler, I'll never carry thread letter to letter ever.
I don't either.
No way.
No.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm. No, it gets ended off. New letter, new start. Yep.
I used to until I took my stuff to the fair and got
horrendously
dinged. That's what my whole point about taking your things to be judged. Am I about the, you know, some people go, oh, I'm not about the ribbons. Oh, buddy, I am about the ribbons. I do like that. You know, I do like thinking, oh, yeah, I was the grand champion. I do like to think about that. But that's not my primary focus now. My primary focus is to get constructive criticism about my stitching because I have taken everything that they have said over the years and I've tried to improve it because I want to be the best stitcher that I can be. And boy, by golly, you can figure out pretty fast where you are on that line continuum if you are open yourself to a little criticism. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
And I mean, taking my stuff to the fair 12 years ago, that was the best thing I did for my stitching career was do that, even though it hurt me. And I'd get angry about it, you know, because I'd think, how dare anybody tear me down like that? But honestly, it has made me a better stitcher. And I think about things in a whole different way because of that. And I mean, and let's be honest with you, Fiber Talk has made me think, it's made me a better stitcher because you hear your what Fiber Talk provides for the average stitcher that listens to this podcast is not only just cross stitch, if that's your primary love, but you hear about needlework and gold work and this and that. And you can take all those things, how those people think about starting and stopping and this and that, and incorporate it into your own work, whether if that's just cross stitch, that's just cross stitch. You know what I mean?
Right.
And you can make yourself a better stitcher. That's what the beauty of this podcast is, in my opinion, is that you can hear all this from people all over the world and then put it into your bag of tricks and become better. And I mean, I have become vastly, you know, you would say, just me being from co-hosting Wednesdays with you, I mean, and you ask me questions and then I'll say something like, well, no. And then after I re-listen, because I always re-listen because I never know what we talk about. And I re-listen to it. And then I think, then I'll sit and think about it. Like, well, what does he mean by that? And then I'll like sit and think about it. And then it's like, oh, that's what he means about it. And then I'll think and think and think about it. And it makes me better. You know what I mean? And that's, I just love that. That makes me feel, you know, like I'm trying to do something great. I don't know what to say, but I mean, you know what I'm saying? I want to be good. I'm that kind of person. If I'm going to do it and I'm going to put my name on it or I'm going to put my name behind it, well, by golly, it's going to be the best work that I can do because that's my name. And so I mean, vastly, that's why I try to tell everybody every time I talk or have a video or a blog is, are you watching, are you listening to Fiber Talk? Why not? You need to listen to Fiber Talk. It makes you better, you know? And then you hear people say, oh, well, this is my hobby and I don't want to, you know, this is my hobby. I don't want to think about being perfect. I just want to stitch. I don't want to think about it. Well, I know it's a hobby, but you can still do your hobby best. It's my hobby too. And I still want to do my hobby the best that I can do. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
That's the way I feel about it anyways.
Well, it's, and that's why when I started this thing, that I wanted to have a variety of techniques and stitchers from all kinds. And I know there are some people who look at the guest, oh, I don't do needlepoint, so I'm not listening. But that's the point is, no, you can learn something from the needle pointer that applies to you. Like, I'll tell you, one of the things that I'm carrying with me in my head these days is Allison Cole, when we talked about gold work.
Mm-hmm.
And she was telling about how people were having trouble getting their pearl, or I don't know what, you know, I don't know what spiraled gold stuff it was that is couched down, and they were having trouble getting it to lay side by each. They were getting gaps.
Mm-hmm.
And she knew immediately that they were not couching in the proper direction. And the couching was causing the separation because they were not couching in the right direction. And she could tell immediately by looking at it what they were doing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so then that says to me, all right, where else does that apply? Not couching gold work, but where does how you go up and down with a thread alter the way the line flows, the line of stitches flows, and if you do it another way, do you get a cleaner line?
Yeah.
See, and so those things are what I think about.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't couching gold work, but when I did my little experiment of stitching in hand a couple of weeks ago, I was like, I understand now how come I don't do this anymore. I could just immediately, and I'm not saying that people that stitch in hand don't know what they're doing. I don't mean that, but it's just for me, I cannot get the best looking stitches by stitching in hand. I can get okay looking stitches, you know, for me, you know, for me that they're okay, but for, I cannot personally, it's just not in my bag of tricks that I can stitch in hand and it look even every time. You know what I mean?
Right.
I just can't do that. But I know that other people, I've seen people that stitch in hand and their things are gorgeous. I mean, absolutely stunning, even tension. No, you know, whatever. It's just that I can't do that. And so I know that it doesn't work for me. And so I'm not going to do that. And I think that's what people have to learn. You know, everybody always wants to mimic or copy or, you know, whatever, somebody else.
Don't do it.
No, you have to march to the beat of your own drum and figure out which drumming stick is the best for you. You know, because what works for me might not work for you. And so that's just, you're right. I've just, you know, and I'm going to be honest and say I didn't listen to every Fiber Talk up until like probably I started listening every time without fail probably 18 months ago, probably. And then it was because I just for what you said, Gary, is that, oh, well, I don't needlepoint. I'm not going to needlepoint. I don't needlepoint. I don't want to listen to her. You know what I mean? And I'm certain that there's needlepointers that don't want to listen to the cross-stitch people.
Yeah, I guarantee
or,
that.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, so I think that we've got to quit, you know, putting ourselves into a certain stall and realize that we all go to the barnyard of needlework. We can listen to this chicken and that goat, and this, you know what I mean? And figure out stuff that's better and that will work for you and whatever your primary, you know, hobby or, you know, desire is of stitching, whatever that may be. You can learn something. I can learn something from a needle pointer. I can learn something from a gold worker, you know, whatever. And that's what I believe the beauty of this podcast is that everybody, you can learn something, even if we're just talking about going on a trip and what Ellie and Keith are doing, sometimes somewhere in that hour, there's going to be some sort of valuable information in there. And you're entertained a little bit along the way, or that's at least what our hope is, or my hope is. So
yeah, yeah. But no, it's and I think this is a unique hobby in that it's one of the few where you can learn from different techniques.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, because there are a lot of hobbies where you just got to pound away. If you really want to get good at it, you just pound away at it and get good and focus on that technique or that approach or that style or whatever it might be. And then you get mm-hmm. good. But I think this is one where you can draw from so many different areas and just little things that come together and make you a better stitcher in the technique that you prefer.
Right.
Whatever that might be. But by trying, right. for instance, by trying black work where you have to learn to end threads so that basically front and back is the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to do it that way, by doing that, you become a better stitcher. By doing this queen sampler and doing things reversibly, you stop and think what's going to happen when you put that needle down through the thread.
And, yes.
And then that to me, now when I go back to regular cross stitch, like you said, you had trouble just doing regular cross stitch.
I didn't,
but I will say that I stopped to think when I was just doing regular cross stitch, what's happening when I do this?
Right.
And I think my cross stitching is better. And I'll be curious now when I get these Santas done where I have done just little bits over time, I'll be curious now to see if I find that it's better from now on because of the queen sampler, see?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I know we're not very far on the queen sampler, but the amount of knowledge that I've learned, that I've gained just doing what we've done so far, and I know I've said this before, but I truly mean this, and I'm not blowing smoke because I'm just not a smoke blower. But I have learned so much that I mean, it's invaluable to me. What I have learned is invaluable to me, and it's created a spark in me. It's rejuvenated my love of needlework. It makes me hungry to learn other things. And I know I've said this before too. If you would have told me that in February, I would have started laughing and said, yeah, right. Because that's how I felt about it. And I have all that to thank. I have you to thank for that because I would not have done it had you not pushed me to do it. I wouldn't have. And I had no desire to. I mean, I thought it was gorgeous. I thought it was like the Magnus Opum when I saw it. And I thought there is no way I could ever attain that. And I mean, I'm not saying that mine's going to look as good as Linda Vinson's, but I'm pretty happy with what I've done so far. And
well, and the end result is you've discovered that yes, you can.
Yeah, I can. Yeah.
Darn right you can. Yeah.
Yeah. The 2019, and I have said this over and over this year in many places, but 2019 has been a struggle in some ways for me, but I will always remember this year for the year that I said, yes, I can, to a lot of variety of things in my life. Yes, I can to weight loss. Yes, I can to finishing Jesus after 3 false starts. Yes, I can to doing this queen sampler. Yes, I can. And so, and for me, I don't have very high self-esteem. I really don't. I'm just a servant, and I want everybody else to succeed in my life. And I want to succeed, but I don't, I'm not the primary focus in my life. And I don't have very good self-esteem. And this has given me self-esteem because I thought I couldn't do it, and I am doing it. And so it almost makes me want to cry even just saying it right now, because I needed that. And so, you know, God puts people in your path for a reason, and he put you in my path, I think, to know that I can. That brings a tear to your eye, doesn't it? But I think that that's true. I think that's truly, I truly believe that nothing happens without a reason. And who would have thought? I would not have. I'm sincere about that. I would not have thought that I could do that. And I mean, I'm far from being finished, but I will be finished someday. And I think it'll look decent.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, same here. I mean, this is a challenge for me too. I mean, both of us, this is new territory for both of us, but yeah, mm-hmm. And I think mine's going to look decent too. And I'm going to hold it up and say, yeah, look at this. And because the journey, well worth it.
Yes, absolutely.
Way, way well worth it. Yeah.
Yes.
All right. That's it.
All right.
Almost an hour and a half. We got to stop.
So <That's> okay.
Sunday embroidery designer Kelly Fletcher from Johannesburg, South Africa. So that'll be fun. A little view from the other end of the world. That's going to be fun. Now, next Wednesday would normally be Debbie Rowley, and I haven't even told Debbie this, but my schedule this week is nuts, and I've got to travel next week, so not going to be able to record. But I have a couple of videos I did with Nicola Parkman in May when I was at Sassy Jack's. So that'll be the Wednesday show. Will be the two videos with Nicola. One of them is one of her new introductions, so you'll get to see that, which will be fun. So that'll be next Wednesday. And then, like I said earlier, way earlier, follow Fiber Talk on Instagram so that you get the live shows when we do them, because that's where we're going to do them. And then for the Queen Sampler, follow Vanna Pfeiffer on Instagram and Fiber Talk, because we both post separately there. We cross hashtag, but we both post separately for what we're doing. So if you want to keep up and see what we're doing, follow both of them, and then you'll get the updates for both of us. And feel free to ask questions, even if you're not doing it. Ask questions. We're happy to answer them. That's why we're doing this, is so everybody can learn. So, And then if you misbehave at a needlework store, Fiber Talk made me buy it, gets you off the hook. And yeah, if you buy something and we were the ones who caused you to buy it, blame us. Say, I bought it, I heard about it on Fiber Talk, because we like to hear that.
That's right. And support our sponsors, because we're blessed that they support us.
Yep. They keep this going, trust me, because the bandwidth expenses, that. So without these sponsors, I'm pretty sure I'd had to have a hard thought about whether it can continue. So let's make it a possible. Appreciate it. That's it. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.